early on in our homeschool journey, I became aware that beauty and an appreciation for art in all its various forms was a really important aspect to our home education, especially because I had artistic children and I wanted to foster that in them. So years ago, I discovered Catholic Heritage curricula and was first introduced to their art appreciation resources for young children in their Art Masterpieces series, which was excellent and we used for a number of years. A desire for deeper understanding led us to the CHC program, Ever Ancient, Ever New. It's a program in two parts. Ever Ancient, Ever New guided us from ancient art forms chronologically to the art of the Renaissance. And then part two leads us from the art of the High Renaissance through the modern era. The first thing that drew me to the art appreciation that they offer is the history and the distinctly Catholic perspective. It was really beautiful. But the program also presents art theory and opportunities to practice with a companion art pad that goes along with the books. CHC materials are always steeped in beauty, and this program is really delightful. It helped us cultivate a sensitivity to beauty. And I think for the children that I used it with, it gave us all the foundation in the eras of art and characteristics that define them. The lives of artists, cultural influences, and the implications of those influences in art are explored in the context of each chapter. Ever Ancient, Ever New can be used independently by children in grades 5 and up, or read together as a family with much younger children. As something we valued in our family, this program makes art appreciation something that parents can share with their children without being overwhelmed by the idea of introducing art. It's beautiful, it's simple and engaging. A link to the program is in the show notes. Have a look and enjoy all of CHC's art programs. I received a message on my YouTube channel, which I hardly ever post anything on anymore, which I should do. I apologize. If we're YouTubers, I just found that most people were just listening to the podcast via audio, and it's just a lot more work to edit video. So that is why I'm not doing that. But anyway, I received a comment on a video that I had to put up on YouTube a while back. And the person was asking me, what do you recommend for curricula for a preschooler, right? And for those of you who've been listening for a while, you've probably, figured out that what my answer would be to that. So my answer to that would be that, no formal curricula for preschoolers in general. I mean, of course, there are, always variances and different situations, but in general, curriculum got started really late in our house. And I think there are a few advantages to that. And I thought maybe I would just do a little episode on sort of why that is and how it got started and the upside and the downside to using curriculum. Okay. So first of all, I think it requires some definition, is that when we talk about curricula, we're really talking about the method, the scope and sequence of whatever subject or subjects we're trying to teach in any given area and at any given stage. So when we choose to not use curricula, you still have a curriculum that you're personally using. It might be that you've designed it yourself. It might be that it's decided by what you do each day. Then that's really becomes the standard by which you teach, is that I'm going to see what comes up today in our reading, in our adventures, in our life. I'm going to capitalize on those things. That is a curriculum, right? It's not set out and established beforehand, but the ideas behind it or the ideals behind it are. And so, so I think we have to be clear that it doesn't mean we're not doing anything. Even if you're completely unschooling, it doesn't mean you don't have a curricula that you abide by, right? Have curricula that you abide by. So I think it's important to sort of be aware of that, right? Because even if you wrote down your particular curriculum for math or your particular curriculum for a child, if you wrote it down at the end of the day or at the end of the year, it would still be a curriculum. Okay. So I think it's important to just qualify that. I thought it's kind of important for me to just sort of chat about how that got started in our house, because I've tried lots of different things over the years, and I don't mean curriculum, but I mean in general. I'm talking about life and the way we do things, the way we approach things, the way I, you know, manage my laundry, the way I cook dinner, whatever. I've tried lots of different things over the years, and I tend to be a pretty quick study in the sense that that if something's not working, I'm happy to let it go. Okay, I'm not going to keep sort of pushing an issue if I feel like it's not working. And so I tend to, if I recognize that something isn't working or that there could be a better idea out there, I tend to move on from that idea fairly quickly, which, you know, in some cases is an advantage and in some cases is a disadvantage. But in terms of homeschooling my kids, I felt that it led to, you know, advantages in the way we did things. So essentially what happened when I very first started homeschooling, my oldest daughter was about four and a half. And, you know, we were approaching, you know, we were doing what we would call kindergarten. And I had a very sort of unschooly unit study kind of approach to begin with. I didn't have anything structured for her because I just felt like I was quite capable of having one child and designing some ideas around the kinds of things I would love for her to learn and we could learn together. I had this idea that I would, she was really into birds at the time. And I had this idea that, okay, we read the book regularly, Are You My Mother? And that was really where the idea came from. And her interest in birds came from too, is like the sort of the habits of birds and the what birds do. So we read Are You My Mother? Probably every day or a couple of times a day, because it was kind of her book of the moment. And we had, I had this idea that I would teach her about eggs and reproduction via chicks and chickens and eggs and how reproduction happened in that framework, because I thought that would be a really interesting sort of biology study. So I was kind of excited about doing this, and I went to the library and I picked out a few books and I bought a couple of books that all sort of talked about how a chick develops inside the egg. I thought that was just going to be sort of a really cool plan, right? So I was excited about it. I was excited about how, you know, she was going to be excited about it. Anyway, so once I had all my resources sort of attained, then I thought, okay, next time she asks to read Are You My Mother? I'll make this little unit study out of chicks and eggs. So that's what happened. The next day or two, she asked to read Are You My Mother? And so we start reading it, and I start saying, isn't it cool how an egg comes from, a chick comes from an egg? Isn't that cool? Like, wouldn't that be cool to kind of find out how that happens? Like, how does the chick get out of the egg? So am I asking some leading questions and whatever? And she said, well, yes, but what I'd really like to know is how birds make their nests. Like, how do they know how to make a nest? That doesn't even make sense. And so I said, oh yeah, that would be a fun thing to explore too. But I think it would be really fun to explore how a baby chick develops inside the egg. Don't you think that would be interesting? She said, well, I think it would be, but I think I'm more interested in the nest. And so I went down this path with her for a few moments. And I could feel myself kind of getting agitated. Like, why is she not, I worked really hard to kind of pull this unit study together, and I thought she'd be so excited about it. And why isn't that happening? Why is she sort of in my view, kind of like giving me pushback, right? Well, she wasn't. She was just expressing what she particularly was interested in, as opposed to the thing that I kind of had in my build up in my brain as what we should be learning, right? And so after a few minutes, I thought, you know, why don't I just go down the nest path with her? If she's really interested in nests, why don't we just go down that path? Because it's captured her right now. And I'm sure at some point she'll be interested in eggs and chicks. And I know where the resources are now. So I thought, okay, so I just kind of switched gears and okay, let's look up eggs in the encyclopedia. Let's look at all the resources that I could have. Next time we go to the library, I'll pick out some books on how birds build their nests and various other things. So I kind of switched gears quite quickly. And what happened was essentially she went from from, you know, this sort of what I consider to be pushback, to be completely engaged and excited about learning everything there was about eggs. And of course, at some point down the road, she also became interested in chicks and eggs. Like, why don't we talk about that now? You know, and I don't know if it was 2 weeks later, 2 months later, I don't remember, but ultimately it eventually happened, and how birds fly and what a bird's skeleton looks like and all the various things about birds that you could possibly be interested in came across our path at their various points in life. And it was this like aha moment for me that, oh, okay, when she's really grabbing something and really interested in something, that's when I can really capitalize on what she wants to know, right? On teaching her whatever aspect of science or history or geography or whatever, at this moment in time, the path I can go down with her. But I can also kind of lead her down that path by what I choose to read, right? I can take a look at her books and sort of imagine what she might like to read out of them, or we can go to the library. And then in those moments where she's obviously interested in a certain topic, I can go down that path with her. So it just seemed like to make a lot of sense that would be a really, really good avenue to take with kids without being sort of what I perceive to be sort of utterly unschooling, that I'm more sort of leading her down certain paths and really working with what she picks up along the way, right?
Moving is right up there with death and divorce in the stress Olympics. But fear not. Turn that box of woes into a crate of woes with Moving Tips in the Life Beyond Boxes podcast with Premium Q Moving. Dive into the world of hassle-free moves, learn tips and tricks to save on cash and your sanity. Say goodbye to those moving meltdowns and hello to the smooth sailings. Or should we say smooth movings? Tune into Life Beyond Boxes with Premium Q Moving on lifebeyondboxes.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. And with us, unpack the secrets to a stress-free move.
So that was kind of where it all started. So after 3 or 4 years of sort of this style of learning that I now brought my second daughter into, now I had another baby, and you know, I was bringing this this was just part of our daily walk. I really noticed that their excitement for learning was really, really existed, and my excitement for it really was there. I wasn't getting pushback on anything. And the storybook, in a sense, kind of grew up into reading, you know, our first novels together. So we started reading our first novels, and we just had the same attitude, like, oh, I might ask some leading questions, or they might ask questions. And then we would just go down the path of where those questions led us. Say, for example, we were reading Charlotte's Web. So I might say something like, I wonder how a spider builds a web. And they might grab onto that, or they might think, how does a spider live? Do all spiders live the same way? And maybe we look into the life of spiders. Maybe we look into their different habitats. But over the course of reading a novel for a couple of weeks or however long it took, all of those questions would be asked. And if there was any that were unasked, well, the next time around, you know, we would probably address those questions. Or looking into spiders, we got a book on spiders. If they weren't interested in how they made nests, but were interested in spider eggs and how spiders grew, then it's going to eventually address their webs and how their webs are formed and how a spider makes silk. And all those kinds of questions are going to be addressed just because the kind of excitement about spiders is in the air at the moment in time. What I noticed over time, outside of my own family, when we got together and had sort of homeschool meetings with other moms in our area, other moms were expressing kind of a lot of pushback and a lot of sort of kids' meltdowns and how they were broaching these topics of difficulty with their kids that I wasn't really having, right? I wasn't really getting pushback, but then I wasn't really using curriculum either. So my initial thought was because I don't use curriculum, and I'm kind of willing to go down that path with them, which was definitely part of the story. I think the other part of the story was that I wasn't sort of punitively oriented. So as my understanding of attachment grew, and my comfort level with not being punitive grew, that I also recognized that was also a reason why sort of the tantrums and the meltdowns about schoolwork and about other things just sort of weren't happening, because because they were just allowed to sort of feel their frustrations and feel their upset and disappointment. And so, I mean, it was working fairly well, and not that there was never, you know, issues, but that was, you know, those were things that I think helped to have sort of a smooth homeschool vibe, right? To get back to sort of curricula for a moment, I think for the most part, curricula places a stressor on parents and therefore also places a stressor on children, right? And I'm going to take a math book, for example. A math book for, say, a grade three or a grade four would be designed for a sort of an archetypical nine-year-old in mind. Okay. Now, what we know is that there isn't an archetypical nine-year-old, that child development is very unique. There's children who read at three. There's children who aren't fluent readers until they're 12. There are children who pick up on math concepts really early, and some that comes very late, and they need a lot more practice and support and coaching. So what does an archetypical nine-year-old mean? You know, it's a unicorn. We don't have that. So somebody who's publishing a math curriculum is trying their best to meet the average nine-year-old where they're at and then move them forward in skill. So that in and of itself, that's a good thing, right? To move them forward in skill. Okay. But what you're going to find with most children, maybe there's 20% or 30% that sort of track fairly closely to the archetypical nine-year-old as you're moving forward in their developing their skill and their knowledge in math. But with most kids, you're going to find that some pages are too easy. Some pages are just right. Some pages they just aren't tracking on. But we can feel as parents like, okay, well, I'm not doing this right, or my children's just not doing what they're supposed to be doing if we're not doing all the pages. So we get kind of trapped in this idea that, okay, well, I need to be doing the pages that are too easy because they're there, and my child isn't doing very well if they're not doing the pages that are too hard. So, you know, what do I do with this? And so that's a stress inducer, right? And we want to approach that. If you're going to use a math program, you want to be able to approach that without stress. So I think really that starts with sort of asking maybe yourself and the child some questions, right? Is that, okay, here's a page. First of all, before you even start a math workbook, say that you're going to find some pages that are probably you already know and they're too easy for you, and some pages that are too hard. So we'll leave those ones until the end that are too difficult. And the ones that are too easy, you can do them if you want for practice, but you're not required to do them. So we can just skip those and move on to something more interesting or more exciting if you want. So then as you approach the pages, if you're going to recognize if you're sitting with your child, I think this is a really important part of much of our learning, particularly math. If you sit with them for 5 or 10 minutes, or as they get older, maybe 15 or 20 minutes, if you sit with them while they're doing their math, it's going to be much more effective teaching than it is to sort of sit them with a math book and have them trying to figure out new concepts on their own. It doesn't require very much to sit down with a child and say, okay, let's spend our 5 minutes. Let's just sort of chit chat about this for a minute and see where we're going with it. And if this is a concept that you could be tracking on, or whether we save this one for later. So let's ask the child this. Oh, this is something that you did and you were getting really good at this, this particular skill last year. So would you like to just do these pages for practice, or would you like to do a few of the questions, or would you like to just skip this page? Cause I think you already know how to do this, sort of in their hands then to do that, right? And then they're going to meet some pages where they read the instructions, or you read them to them, and they work with that for a few minutes, and it's obvious that they're kind of getting this new concept, like maybe fractions. They reach some things where they just haven't got a clue what's going on. Their brain just isn't ready for this particular thing. So they're going to get really stalled out and frustrated if you just keep trying to push them to do that thing. Because what we can say is, you know what, I'm going to put these pages in a file, or we're going to mark them, and we're going to come back to these pages, because sometimes your brain's just not quite ready to understand a particular concept. So we just come back to it. There's no problem here. So if you're relaxed about it, easygoing about it, not ruffled about it, they are probably going to follow suit. Okay. You know, we need to be asking, is this not working for you?
you know, is this not working for you right now? So you it's important for you and, in a sense, the child to be kind of the master of the curricula and not have it master you, okay? If it's causing you stress, put it away for a while. You know, and you don't have to slam the book and say, you know, we're not doing this. This is, you know, you're not getting it. You're not trying hard enough. You're not whatever. Or this is a dumb book or whatever. You just, you know what? I think we're not ready for this. And it's frustrating us. It's frustrating me. It's frustrating you. Let's just put it away because we don't need frustration. Learning is, you know, learning should be joyful. Sometimes it's a bit hard work, but that's okay. So the best resource that I ever read on this topic was Ruth Beechick's book, The Three R's. So she has, they used to be published as three small books. Now they're published as one book called The Three R's, and they're on reading, language, and math. And so what she stresses is the importance of kind of using what you have and finding learning in the day-to-day and of making learning kind of like breathing. So this is a great resource. This is a great resource for us to be leaning into, because there are so many opportunities for learning and making it natural and what she calls inductive reasoning. So she kind of discusses inductive reasoning and what that is. And I think that this is a really, really important concept, the idea of inductive reasoning. So we're exposed to ideas and situations and content, and we make observations. This is just a natural process of our life, right? Especially if we're fostering that, if we're kind of dialoguing with our kids. It's like, oh, look at this. You know, yesterday I measured out white sugar and it just sat level on the measuring cup. And today I'm measuring brown sugar and it kind of heaps up in the measuring cup. Or I can push it down and it is a lot more. It's just as much sugar, but it's all pushed down so it's flat. You know, and just wondering about that, right? And talking about how that could be, why that is, what the difference is in the makeup of those two sugars, and why half a cup isn't always half a cup, depending on what you're measuring. Natural ways of sort of speaking with our kids about what's going on in the world. So from these many observations, and kids are natural scientists, they are natural observers, We observe, we take in, we see things, hear things, wonder things, and we draw conclusions over time about how things work. Just to go back to the sugar for a moment. So if I said, you know, we measure out half a cup of sugar and there's a half a cup of sugar and we didn't have the opportunity to talk about brown sugar at any given point, that a child could draw a conclusion from that. Oh, okay, when you measure out a half a cup of sugar, it's a half a cup of sugar. But so they've drawn a conclusion, but then we expose them to something else, and suddenly it's like, oh, okay, that conclusion I drew was limited, right? It was a limited conclusion. That applies to white sugar. Maybe it applies to powdered sugar, but it doesn't apply to sugar across the board. So isn't that interesting? But over our time and our life experiences and our chatting together as we're raising our kids, they draw conclusions about how things work. Okay. So through our discussion, through pointing things out, through talking through a problem or discussing a concept, these help with the skill of inductive reasoning, drawing conclusions from that which we are exposed to over and over again. We can draw conclusions about that. And that's what inductive reasoning is. So my own books, my little homeschool series that I wrote, sort of aim to take what Ruth Beechick offers and put it into sort of the more practical application when you're actually sitting down with your child. I think she's fantastic at sort of looking at the overarching ideas and creating an attitude that fosters natural learning. She has also offers some, you know, how we sit down and actually do this, but I felt like it was important to sort of have books that kind of gave little scenarios, you know, gave you a picture of what this actually looks like when you sit down to do it. So really, you know, my mission in terms of just homeschooling and educating has become kind of the practical application of creating a joyful environment when educating your children. So that's sort of what I aim to do. And I hope that this little little episode in my life helps you to sort of understand kind of maybe a little bit more about what I'm about and how it all happened very organically. And that you know, I'm sure you've heard me say it before, but that learning happens best in an environment of love. And so that's what I aim to do with my podcast and my blog and my various books, is to help parents see how they can create a loving learning environment and see how that plays out in the day-to-day working with their children. So God bless you, and I will pray for you all.